Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
You get to experience it for breakfast. Hello! The Toucher and Rich Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What is it?
98.5 to Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And Rich, what is going on?
Okay, so did you take the kids out trick-or-treating?
I did indeed.
Okay. Yeah. Do you dress up with the kids?
I do not.
Oh, okay. All right. Do you, John Wallach?
Yes to the first, no to the second.
Okay, you do not dress up for the kids.
No.
Okay, all right. Well, this is probably the last year
you?
Because... Yeah. Every year they get to pick what me and Mary dress up as.
What did you dress up as?
Well, Hank was was Spider-Man, and he wanted me to be Thor. So I was Thor, which was really sexy because I was letting the gun show.
Was it hard to find a costume or no?
No. It's easy as hell. Thor's easy. Like, that's an easy one. I saw somebody went as fake news...
Hey.
They're a newspaper and it said fake on it. Like, you're fake news. Yeah, political Jew.
Pretty clever.
Yeah, how about that? But so I remember when I was a kid and I went trick-or-treating, you know, there were about like 15 houses like around where I could go. So that was essentially an hour and a half. You would walk to each of the 15 houses and then you were done. And, you know, each neighborhood had kind of like a weird house, one that maybe was a little bit further off the road and somebody that nobody really knew who they were that lived there. And it was kind of a dare to go to that house. And I remember one time I went and we knocked on the door and we just kept knocking until finally this old lady answered. I guess she lived there by herself and she didn't have anything. So she went and she gave us this like a Little Debbie snack cake and threw it in our bag. And I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't suck. That's kind of a cool payoff. And then there's people who are just odd. My friend who lives in Georgia said that he went trick-or-treating and he was going through his kid's bag and apparently one of the parents put this in there. Oh, would you like to describe this? He sent me a picture.
Those are ketchup packets.
What?
Like from McDonald's? Yeah, they are. They're like the ones you get at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dude just went to a fast food restaurant and put it in a bag.
That's like drunk and divorcee.
Holy crap. And I texted him back and I said, Hang on. It was this.
If that's all
like,
you. If that's all you got, you shut the lights off and lock the door and pretend Halloween's not.
No, that's
going
like
on.
A drunken divorcee, who's gotten takeout for the last,
just let it
four months.
No, do you know? Did he actually open? Like, was there a basket waiting on the
porch,
or did he actually come to the door and give them to the kids?
So he talked to his kid, and he goes, "Which house did you get this from?" He goes, "Oh, I know what house it was because we were all like, this is really weird. We got ketchup packets from this guy." And he said it was like a normal house on the route. Like, this wasn't like the strange house in the neighborhood that you would go. And this was a guy who was giving out ketchup packets all night. Like, he was in on Halloween, and this is what he had.
Well, it's a lot of ketchup packets, too. So it shows that the man has
thought this through. He's
also a spendthrift a little bit because he'll keep the extra ketchup packet.
All right, 617-779-0985. Have you got anything weirder than this? Because I've gotten two things that were maybe not as weird as ketchup packet. One's definitely weirder. So there was one time I went to this house, and this guy put this weird candy in my bag, and when I pulled it out, it said Zep on the side of it.
Yeah,
and
I know what Zep is.
Okay,
what's Zep?
Do you know what Zep is, Fred?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's a kind of candy.
No, that's not Zep. Zep, it was the company. Zep, and I found out that it's a pest control and disinfectant company.
What?
And I don't know whether or not he had just taken a bunch of the Zep, like mini mints or things from the front bowl, if he happened to work at that company, and shoved it in his bag and gave us a bunch of Zep ones.
All right.
But there was one time where a friend of mine got a lighter. Which, by the way, greatest Halloween candy in the world.
Yeah.
Like, if you're 9 and you get a lighter,
you're
the coolest kid on the block. Like, you're going to this guy's house.
Oh, Halloween, you can put that right to work, too.
Oh, without a doubt. Without any doubt in your mind. And, I mean, listen, there's always the weird toothbrush people. Now, in Beacon Hill one year, and this is how Beacon Hill is this, one of the families had run out of candy, and they started giving away dollar bills.
Oh, God.
Which is like
avalanche of people charging.
So the douchiest thing you could possibly do, first of all.
The weird house in our town growing up was Dennis Eckersley's house.
Ooh.
Yeah, so Dennis
Eckersley's house. Eckersley's house. What did that look like?
Eckersley's house lived in Sudbury when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And he hadn't moved. So
switchblade combs?
When I got older, he moved like to a different part of town. But he lived like somewhat close to where I grew up. When I was really young, when I was like into Halloween and going out and all that,
like
and
nude so playing
his,
cards.
His house was kind of like up on a hill. No nude playing cards. He was up on a hill, and you kind of like walk up a winding driveway to get there. And you know, when you're 8 years old, you're sort of intimidated. I think he was playing for the A's at the time, but his family still lived in Sudbury and all of that. And so, you know, by the time you get to Halloween, there's like the possibility maybe he's there, maybe he's not. Like I said, you're a little intimidated by it. And I remember. Like, A, his house was, like, a big-time target for, like, you know, getting egged and stuff like that, right?
Well, because he didn't play for the Red Sox.
And B.
Why would you egg his house?
And I'm not saying I did it, but I'm just saying I remember it happened. And B, like, I remember there was one year I went up there, and all the lights were out, and there was just a basket on the porch full of signed baseball cards.
Oh, that's awesome. Of him?
Yep.
Oh, hell yeah.
There you go. Yep.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, these are, quote-unquote, baseball cards. This is me and Vince Neil. This is me with the boys from Molly Hatchet. Yeah. This is just pictures of my Camaro sign. Let the lady dance.
He just gives out old issues of Hustler.
Well, the ones I've tried and supplied. Hey, this one's got Chester the Molester in it.
I'm not familiar with that character.
You're not familiar with the cartoons in Hustler, Chester the Molester?
No, doesn't sound like a funny cartoon at all.
Oh, yeah, Rich, okay, it wasn't funny. It was hysterical.
Oh, my God.
And this is like when he was like the closer for the A's, and the A's were, I mean, it was like the height of the steroid A's, you know, that A's team that was just a wagon.
Oh, that's awesome. So
we had the Trans Am in the driveway. We had the huge house at the top of the hill. It was
Eckersley. It wasn't like a crazy huge house. It was modest.
Modest for Sudbury is what?
No. The house he moved into after that was not modest. Okay. That was, like, gated and had a guest house and all that different.
For the fancy ones, I got a signed copy.
Somebody just said, for Halloween, I once received a Jesus $20 bill with prayers printed on it. Oh, getting Bibles was a normal thing. Like, you, mini Bibles were something that every
Halloween.
In the
Halloween, South, that was, like, it was all
every,
over the place.
In the South, it was everywhere. Like, I mean, you would get mini Bibles like it was, you know, like, every year there's always someone who gives pencils? Every year there was somebody who would give him a mini Bible.
So one thing we haven't
Did you just go home and devour it?
it wasn't a chocolate Bible.
No.
Then it would have been sacrilegious.
Have you guys, so I remember this was, like, sort of, like, maybe, like, at the end of my childhood, you started to see, like, the Hardo who's giving away, like, apples or, like, almonds or trying to be, like, Mr. Health Nut.
Oh,
like,
we got apples, but those went right in the trash because of the scare.
Razor blades, thing.
Right, so, like, we don't, like, the one thing I have noticed with my kids are real small, but, like, the one thing I have noticed, it doesn't feel like anybody in Duxbury is doing that. Like, it's candy everywhere. Like, is that still going on?
No. It's just candy. Although there was one, the only weird one this year was that there was, like, here's treats for the kids and here's treats for the adults. And I'm like, edibles? but it was homemade granola bars in, like, a Ziploc. I'm like, all right, you're a maniac. I'm not going to eat that. I don't know what that's made out of. No. All right, 617-779-0095. What is the line two?
You got soy sauce.
No.
Like, the packets are an actual, like, bottle.
I don't know. That guy's in there, but I want to hear about line two.
All right, and then we have to move on to Burt Breer. Dylan, go ahead.
What's going on, fellas?
Hey.
Hey, so my friend and I were probably about maybe 10, 11, and we were actually in his neighborhood. Like, he lived in, like, this cul-de-sac where I live.
Dennis Eckersley? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm not talking about Dennis Eckersley. I wish I lived near Dennis Eckersley. That'd be pretty weird. But so we're going through this cul-de-sac to finish up our route where he lives, and we're like, all right, let's hit this, you know, this relatively well-known older guy. He was, like, really generous, always gave out tons of candy. So we go there to finish up the route, and then he answers the door. It was, like, the end of the night. He's like, I don't have any candy left, but why don't you guys come inside and see what I can find? Already, there should have been a red flag. Like, right
there. I would think so. Was it a bike shop?
11, you know, it's 2002, so, like, you know, it's whatever back then, I guess. So we go inside, and, you know, we're just standing in the dude's living room, and it's, like, this 1970s, like, shag carpet type setup. It was the weirdest thing ever.
Run! For God's sake, run!
There's sirens everywhere going off in both of our heads at this point. God. And we're standing there really awkwardly, and then he comes out of the back of the room, and he's like, well, I don't have any more candy, but... do you guys like cheerleaders? Do you like pretty ladies? And we're already like,
oh. You're sure this wasn't a bike shop? And, was your friend's name Dudley?
No, it wasn't. But we're standing there. We're like, yeah. And he hands us these, like, old 1990s, like, cheerleader, like, posed, like, glamour shot cards, and, like, puts us in our bags and send us on our way. It was the weirdest thing ever.
A sexy cheerleader. All right, we'll be back. Burt Breer in studio answering your football questions.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub. For the latest podcasts, the latest sports news, and for Toucher and Rich, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
.985 The Sports Hub will continue your weird Halloween stuff coming up at 9 o'clock. But we have Burt Breer. Friday Mornings with Burt Breer is brought to you by Salvador Auto Group. It's tailgating season, and Salvador has incredible deals on Chevy, Ram, and pre-owned trucks just off Route 2 in Gardner. And at SalvadorTrucks.com, Salvador's got your truck. Now, Burt, we heard all the discussion about Josh Gordon and all the reports that he had broken team rules and he was going to be punished. That didn't seem to happen.
I have the Rappaport clip now. This is him, because Ian Rappaport was the one who broke this story, that Josh Gordon was going to be punished for some sort of reason. And Jeff Howe, I think, later on said it was because he was late for the the plane. And then all of a sudden, he was on the field and played as many snaps as you almost, I think, second only to Edelman, I think, as far as receivers were concerned. So everyone's like, well, what happened? And Ian Rapoport was asked about it.
I want to talk about the Josh Gordon situation. It was before, it was on Monday afternoon. I got a tip that Josh Gordon was informed that he was going to be sitting out a quarter of the game against the Bills because of discipline. I was told he had a lateness, and so I checked on it. I had three sources confirm that Gordon was informed that he was going to miss a quarter. Other reporters, including Mike Giardi, reported that it wasn't one lateness. It was actually two. It was late to the team flight, and it was late to a meeting. And I checked all the boxes, and I went with my report. And then first play of the game, there goes Josh Gordon on the field. And so everyone wants to know, like, what happened. And I will say the honest truth is I do not know. Sometimes the reporting of things and getting it out there, especially before the game, does change what actually happens. But I may never know. And I've since gotten calls from people who confirmed it to me, calling me up and asking me what changed. And I literally have no idea. It happens, unfortunately. It is not fun. So life as a reporter is weird. But if for anyone wondering, that is what happened.
Okay, when we were talking about it, you were kind of, I don't want to say smiling, but
because I've been there before. I know, like, look, all these things, you're reporting them in real time, and things can change. Mm-hmm. And, I've been there before, and I checked on it when I had to go on TV that night. And, you know, the report came out, and I hadn't heard it. But I checked on it, and it checked out. Like, he was late. And so
he was late for what? Because he said that I haven't heard about that first meeting. That's the first time I've heard about that.
He was late. He was late for, as far as I could take it, he was late for something on Sunday. Now, whether or not he was late for the flight specifically, for the bus to go to the flight, I'm not positive what the specifics were. I just heard he was late for something on Sunday.
Okay.
That, you know, as it relates to – and remember – the thing about this is that, like, with everything with a player like this is going to be much bigger than it is with any other player.
Sure.
And it should be, because that's the bet he made for himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is exactly why he got cut in Cleveland, guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, the final straw in Cleveland was he tweaked his hamstring on a Friday night because he was screwing around with this promotional video thing.
Mm-hmm.
The staff there thought he was out of football shape, and that's why that happened. And then on Saturday morning, he was late to the building the day before a game. So it's like exactly the same thing.
Right.
And of course, you know, if he's going to be, you know, sat down for the first quarter of the game, that's going to be a much bigger deal than if, you know, Trey Flowers or Dante Hightower or Stephon Gilmore, if those guys are late, you know what happens? Bill probably says, don't ever let this happen again.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and then that's it. I think in most other cases, if you were bringing in like a mid-level or a lower-level player and he had the background that Josh had coming here, he's gone.
Yeah.
He is absolutely gone. Like, all right, we're not – I told you zero tolerance. You're out of here.
Yeah.
The problem with a player like Gordon is that you want to treat him like – you want to treat it like everything he gives you is a bonus.
Yeah.
Because he has been so unreliable over the course of his career. The issue is that he's so talented that he's naturally going to carve out a role for himself.
Sure.
And then you need him, you know? And that's where they find themselves. And that was the problem that Cleveland had for 5 years.
Well, what do you think happened between the reporting of him? Because, I mean, if your source and everyone else's sources is saying that, these are good sources.
I think Jeff Howe had it. Yeah. Like, there were a bunch of different
like a bunch movies. Of people. It wasn't just Ian Rapoport, in fairness. So what do you think happened between the reporting of him being late and him playing all of the snaps?
I wouldn't put it totally past Bill to just look at like the way this was out. And I personally don't think anything like this, I'd be surprised if anything like this made it out there without Bill knowing it was getting out, if that makes sense.
So you think that there's,
like, I don't know.
He had an idea that this was going to be leaked.
I would say it's not impossible that they're trying to send a message to Gordon and then they come double back and put the genie back in the bottle when they see it's turning into a bigger deal.
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, he learned his lesson, but we're not going to embarrass you. We're going to
publicly put your name out there and we're going to let this happen. And then we're going to put it back. Like, I wouldn't put something like that past them. because I mean, look, they're in a tough spot.
And yeah.
Like, to be honest, like to be to if you want to be 100% truthful about this, they put themselves in that spot because when you sign this player, you know that. Like, you have to know, like, we are bringing in a wildly talented receiver, wildly, like a guy who, like, in his second year had 1,600 yards, mm-hmm. basically playing like stoned.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so, like, this guy, like, this guy's wildly, wildly talented and needs a lot of help.
Yeah.
And so, like, part of the deal is, like, you when you bring in a player like that, in 99% of the cases, it's going to be zero tolerance. It's going to be, if, like, you bring a guy like that in, it's like, dude, you mess up once and you're out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, they had to know that, like, this guy is so talented that he's going to find his way onto the field. He's going to – and then we're going to put him on the field and he's going to be good enough where he's going to carve out a role.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden it's like the power swings where it's like because he's playing a role on our team,
yep.
and because we're starting to rely on him,
sure.
now all of a sudden it makes it much harder for us to enforce a zero tolerance policy.
Well, will that be the – kind of the what happens from now on?
I would think so.
What would he have
I would
to
think
do?
So, but this isn't so unlike, you know, Fred, like this isn't so unlike Randy Moss. Like how many guys, you guys remember that bizarre press conference in 2010?
Yeah. Oh, the weight of the earth is on my shoulders.
No, not that one. That was the year before. That was, so there was that. He quit against the Panthers, and we all remember that. Then that was the next week.
Yep.
Where he had like four catches for like 12 yards, but three of them were touchdowns. They did the earth is on my shoulders thing. I'm talking about the next year after the opener when he got up there and he had his sunglasses on and he started talking about not feeling appreciated and everything else.
Why am I not remembering?
It was a wild press conference.
Okay,
so it was week one of 2010.
All right.
And Randy Moss got up there and like just gave this press conference. It was just – and if anyone else did that, they're gone.
How much longer after that was he
– And it was a month.
Okay. All right.
It was a month. That's why I think, like, I honestly think, like, they got aggressive over the last week looking at receivers.
Who do they get the closest to signing? Like, who are they in deep with?
I don't know. Here's what I can tell you about. Like, so Golden Tate, the price came down a little bit on Golden Tate in the days leading up to the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
What I was told was what the Lions were telling everybody over the last 3 weeks was, we'll talk to you about Golden Tate, but it's going to hurt you. Like it's gonna cost you mm-hmm. to come and get this player, and so they still wound up getting a three for him. I don't know that the Patriots would have given up a three for an 8-game rental, you know, because that's sure. what Golden Tate is, and Golden wants to make $16 million a year next year, and their Patriots aren't going to pay him that.
He felt he was underpaid. Did you think that was
who Golden Tate?
Yeah, he thought he was playing at
a
discount.
Every receiver thinks that now. After Sammy Watkins got paid, and Allen Robinson got paid, and Mike, there are so many, and they like you know how these receivers are wired to begin with.
Sure, sure.
Like, all those guys, like now they're looking like whoa, like look what this guy got.
Yeah.
So like I know that they I think they like I know they kicked tires on Demaryius Thomas. They were involved in that. Who I don't think has anything left. Like who
no,
I think who I don't
clearly
think,
not.
Who doesn't have a whole lot left. The Texans were in a kind of a desperate spot there because they lost Will Fuller, and like so those are the two that I know that they inquired about. But they were like I've heard that they were pretty active, just as far in general making calls on receivers over the course of the 7 or 8 days leading up to the deadline. And you wonder if part of that kicked up over the last couple days because mm-hmm. of the Josh Gordon thing where it's like, we need to sort of take some of the power back. So, you know, like we're not in a spot where if we get rid of him, we're really up a creek at that position.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. We'll talk about Rob Gronkowski and everything that's going on with him. Bert Breer from MMQB in studio. Here are the headlines.
It's T&R.
Heard you like to party.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I mean, that's not the way human beings act.
Follow these guys on Twitter at Toucher and Rich.
Boy, did Twitter explode.
Okay.
chasing venture paper. Like with Twitter again. Sick of arguing with white dudes on the internet. When I'm gassed on my own black past, like how a wig again. I like this.
95 the sports up. It's fresh. Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Be listening at 7:50 this morning for your chance to score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom. StopandShop.com. All right, Bert, I don't know how you interpreted this, but it seems like Gronkowski is not overly confident right now. It seems like he's not overly confident. It sounds like
sensitive.
Why is this?
You got every mic on but his.
There you go.
All right, shut up, John.
Sorry.
You don't sound sensitive, pressure. Right?
Yeah, he sounds sensitive. He sounds like kind of down on himself. Okay, so I have a series of questions about this. A, do you believe he's injured?
Yes. I think he's dealing with something. And I can just tell you this. I've had more than one team the week they're playing the Patriots tell me they don't think he can run anymore. Mm. And they're treating him differently because of that.
So it's not that he's being left in the block. It's not that he's just he's unable to get separation is nothing new. This is a new thing.
Well, that they don't like. So that's always been sort of part of him. And that's why I think that like he's. That's why I think Brady unlocks who he is, because there are other teams that on paper would have needed a tight end this offseason that weren't interested in him because they look at him and they say, well, if he's not separating, we don't have Tom Brady at quarterback who can put the ball in spots right. Where like, all right, like the window is this small and we know Gronk's going to go get it. Like not everybody has that sort of quarterback. So in a certain way, and I'm look, I think Gronkowski's played the position at a higher level, to be clear, at a higher level than any player in the history of the league has ever played it. He is an excellent blocker for the position, like one of the best at going up and getting it ever, and as dominant a player as we've ever seen at the tight end position. But in a certain way, and it's going to sound funny, like Brady unlocks who he is because of Brady's accuracy. And so if you had a guy who was already like not great at separating – now all of a sudden, like he's like maybe lost a step. Now you're exacerbating the problem. It doesn't mean, and I think that that's part of why, like if you're Buffalo, and I think this is the way like Buffalo approached him, we're not going to overcommit to stopping him. We're going to, if he makes the circus catch, well, maybe he would make the circus catch if we have two or three guys on him anyway.
Right.
Like, but we don't think he can separate on our guys. And that's part of what I think that's part of, every team looking at him right now is saying, like I think part of every team looking at him is can he run anymore? And I, like again, I've talked to a couple teams that don't think he can. That could be a product of injury. We know that he dealt with some of this early last year and he fought through it. I'm just telling you, the perception is that he can't run anymore.
All right. So yeah. So my question to you would be: is this something that the teams believe is chronic? Like this is not going to get better.
They don't know. I mean, they don't have his medicals. And so, you know, he's dealing with a back. We know that. He's dealt with an ankle. We know that. And last year, like, I thought he looked like he was lumbering. He looked a little clumsy, like, at points early last year. And I think you're seeing that again. Last year, he fought through that. And by the end of the year, he looked great. Could that happen again? Yeah, absolutely could happen again.
Is that the reason? Do you have any concrete evidence that that's the reason why the Patriots went and were looking for a premium wideout? Because they see the end is very close, and they need another guy on the field for Brady that can draw defenses away.
Yeah, I think it's more related just to that. I think that's more related to the receiver position and the state of the receiver position on the roster. Now, remember, like they've got like I think. And I've said this before, I think the offense is fixed. I think the offense is presently constituted. As long as they don't have any major injuries, it's going to be fine. I don't think the offense is what's going to prevent them from winning a Super Bowl if they don't win one. But if you want to look a year or two out, like there are issues there. I mean, Edelman's older. Hogan's older. Edelman's got a year left on his contract after this one. Hogan's in a contract year. Like, do you have someone in the pipeline that you feel great about going forward? Gordon is week to week. You have no idea what you're going to get from him. Like week right. to week, like he's a good player, but like you don't know, like you just you, like there's a lot of uncertainty over what over how long you're going to be able to keep him in line. So I don't know. I mean, I think a bigger part of it is that they just don't have long-term answers at the position, and they're trying to get creative in finding one. And if you want to take it another step, John, you want to look big picture here. The receiver class this year in this year's draft isn't expected to be very good. So there may not be answers there. There aren't going to be great receivers in the wide on the free agent market. I mean, you're seeing some of them move now, like Golden Tate's one of them. It's not like there's going to be this abundance of receivers available. I mean, part of this for the Patriots is taking a big picture view too. And like, not only do we not have like we're okay right now, but our future at the position is very, very iffy.
Do you think that Gronkowski will play beyond this year?
I think that's uncertain.
The fact that you hesitated there is a scary thing.
Well, the reason I hesitate there is because I've covered the NFL long enough to know that when a player opens that door, it doesn't just close. You know, like when a player opens the door to the idea of retiring, like that door stays open until he walks through it. You don't often hear a player talk about, and I mean, the highest profile example of this is Brett Favre, who would disappear for 4 months every offseason.
Right, right.
Like, and the Packers got to the point where they were so frustrated with, like, we can't plan anymore without knowing, like, what you're doing. I mean, I think once a player opens that door to the idea of retirement, they go through this cycle where it's like, okay, like now I want to play again, you know, because training camp's here and the season's close, and I'm ready to go again. Like generally, players that open that door to retirement are going through that the same process they went through the previous year again. And so I would think that Gronkowski, just based on what I know about the way the toll pro football takes on these guys, the process they go through, and everything else, I would absolutely think Gronkowski is going to be at the same point in February he was last February, where it's, I got to figure out if I want to do this again because it took a lot for me to get to the finish line.
All right. I heard something. I might have been on Felger and Maz that I think it was from a caller that he had been targeted once in the red zone this year. And to my understanding, the red zone is when you start in the 20. It's not.
Oh, okay. So that sideline catch last week doesn't count.
From my understanding, that's what I was told. You know, has an incentive-laden contract.
Yep.
Is he pissed off about this?
I would be.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they're making him fight for every dollar still.
Well, I mean, that's the Patriot way.
Well, it's good business. It's good. Like, there's no question. It's good business if you're the Patriots. But this is the organization that basically pioneered. Now, you guys know what per-game roster bonuses are?
No.
Okay, so they pioneered the now a lot of teams do it now, but they pioneered the concept of per-game roster bonuses. Those are roster bonuses that you only get if you're on the 46-man roster. The only reason why a player that's a very good that's a really good player wouldn't be on the 46-man game day roster is because he's hurt.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, these should be outlawed. Is the bottom line? Like the league, the league cannot be on one hand be preaching. Like you'd be preaching like health and safety, and we care about these guys like long-term well-being and all that different stuff. And then on the other end, like creating financial incentives for guys to fight to push through injuries,
right?
Right.
But that's something the players' union will go after in a few years.
I mean, I would think so. This is, but that's yeah. part of his contract. Every piece, every one of those incentives is tied to him staying healthy. And this is a guy who, like, he's had those buttons pushed a lot. Like the Patriots got him to sign a bad contract in 2012 because he was concerned about his long-term health because he'd had the problems in college. And so, like, if you've had those buttons, if the organization had been pushing those buttons with you for a long time, and then that's the only way where you can get a raise that brings you closer to what you think you deserve to make,
sure.
Of course it would aggravate you, especially if now you get to the season and you're having the health problems. Like, of course it would aggravate you.
All right. We'll be back with Bert Breer. Also, Ask a Pink Hat coming up at 8 o'clock.
Toucher and Rich. Toucher and Rich. Can mornings get any better?
Yeah. Could you please help me?
Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. It's Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. Will score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom. StopandShop.com. All right, Johnny Wall game, you got something for Bert from MMQB.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the Cleveland Browns situation. Hugh Jackson finally fired this week, you know, after he actually won a couple of games. But he gave an interview with Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer that was published this morning, and it is truly amazing the way he looks at things now. It's one of those things that if you're a writer that you sometimes put your spin on the quotes that you get from your subject. This time, Mary Kay Cabot didn't have to put any spin on what Hugh Jackson said. It is amazing the way he sees things.
And people thought like that Mary Kay was like taking up for him, and that's like, look, she just
let it fly.
She took the right the right approach to it, which was like, here's what he said.
Yep.
and
let him dig his own grave.
Right. And like, I think what stuck out to me was just the overall lack of accountability there. And there was one bus that was driving over Sashi Brown. There was another bus that was driving over Todd Haley. He admitted that he went around John Dorsey to try to take play calling back from Todd Haley.
We saw some of this during Hard Knocks, and in Cleveland won a couple of games. You're like, okay, maybe he knows what he's doing. But in the end, he knew nothing about anything.
The crazy thing is, my feeling on what the environment in that building was like, and that was why, the reason why they had to fire both of them. Because, on paper, it wouldn't make it. Like, you've got an offensive head coach and an offensive coordinator, and you're blowing both of them out when you've got the number one overall pick, a rookie at quarterback. Like, that wouldn't seem like the best idea. It got so bad there. Things got so bad between those two that John Dorsey and Jimmy Haslam, and for the first time in a long time, they've got a lot of good young players in that roster, like a lot of guys who are 22, 23, 24 years old. They basically made the decision, we cannot have our young players live in this environment. And they were afraid that if they fired one or the other, that it would look like they were taking sides.
Right.
Because the coaching staff, there were factions in the coaching staff. Saunders was a Hugh Jackson guy. Freddie Kitchens was a Todd Haley guy. And so they were worried about, if we don't fire both of them, it's going to look like we're picking sides, and then the problem is going to continue to fester. So we need to fire both of them to make it clear. And the crazy thing about it is, God, and I love Greg Williams, but it like,
but he's
like,
a jackass.
But like in a time when you need sanity, your staff is so effed up that the place you're going to find it is with the Bounty Gate guy.
Yeah, who's a complete jackass and what it seemed to me is a horrible liar that he said all these people were calling him.
No, sending letters.
Oh, sending letters. That's right. They were penning letters with their quill pens, so, requesting him to be coach.
So that means, once again, Cleveland's going to have to blow out the entire staff again and start over again.
Yeah, and to me, this is 100% on Jimmy Haslam, because the buck stops with him to begin. The owner's always like responsible to some degree, but the owner in this case keeps driving into the same ditch. Because if you want to go back and you want to look at it, okay, he's in charge of making sure people can work together. At the very least, if you're the owner, you want to make sure that the people that you're bringing in are capable of having a good working relationship and pulling in the same direction and all that. I'm just telling you, when they put Mike Lombardi and Joe Banner together, you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in the NFL who knew those two people who thought it was going to work.
Right.
So it wasn't like this is one of those they got working together and now all of a sudden it doesn't work. Everybody knew this was going to blow up.
Haslam, right? How much does Haslam care about that team?
So he put those two together. Then after that, he put Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer, who didn't know each other, together. That blew up. Then he put Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown together. Everyone knew that wasn't going to work. That blew up. And then he put Hugh and Haley together, which, again, it was the fourth time that everybody other people in the NFL, if Jimmy Haslam had made a half dozen phone calls, he would have gotten feedback saying, don't do this. This isn't going to work. This is going to blow up. And so this is on Jimmy Haslam now, because it's over and over and over again, there's organizational failure in the exact same way.
Yeah, he does not care about that team at all. He just loves the Flying J in Tennessee football. All right, John, finally, you with Bert Breer.
Hey, Bert.
Hey, John, what's up?
Oh, I'm actually a longtime Browns fan, long-suffering, obviously. Very happy to see Hugh go, but I kind of thought Todd was going to end up being, you know, stepping into that role. So I don't know if you have any inside sources as to when do you think Sarge will be fired, hopefully before Christmas. What do you think?
Sarge?
Yes, it's a Sarge call.
It's a Sarge call.
Oh.
Sarge.
I'm not familiar. Oh, okay.
You know who Sarge is?
I know who Sarge is.
Okay. Yeah. You're not aware of what happens on
have,
this program?
I don't have the button that goes,
I enjoyed Sarge's Cribs episode.
Yeah. You really, I mean, look, you should be honored to get a call like that during your stay
here. To get a Sarge
yeah,
call?
Yeah, yeah.
It means that you've succeeded in something in life. All right.
Aha!
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich.
Didn't have access to that. All right, Bert Breer, thank you so much for the time.
All right, thanks, guys.
You can read him at the MMQB where he forced out Peter King. And
It was a coup.
That's right. We will be back. No commercials, just the headlines, and then Nick at the parade with Ask a Pink Hat.